Welcome to Imagine This Podcast, where we discuss, celebrate, and highlight all of the excellent and abundant arts and culture in Milwaukee.
We hope that after listening to the pod, you'll see and experience our city and the incredibly vibrant arts and culture community in a new way.
I'm Mac Antigua.
And I'm David Lee.
Season two, baby.
We're back.
Did you notice, listener, how we mixed it up? Did you notice?
We are back. You know, it was nice to not have to produce a podcast for a month. Like that month long vacation from producing the podcast felt really great.
But I took a vacation of producing a four episode live stream
that's
in its place, which we actually booked 12 guests or something.
Yeah,
compared to like four guests in a month.
Yeah,
so
I guess
actually
that, yeah.
I don't think it was much of a vacation.
It felt like it though, because you know I end up like having to. Super producer David.
Yeah, that's right. You carry a little bit more weight in the production side of it. I'm just more about writing the like questions, and sometimes it's corresponding with the guests. But yeah, you carry the sort of like you're in front of the recording table, and you're like moving up the dials. And...
Yeah, the Road to Democracy show rebroadcasts was super easy, right? Because it was just we're able to download the audio file. We recorded our openings and outros, and yeah, super easy. But this is a little bit more work. But we are super excited to be back for. It's so random, right? Season two. We are in November right now. We launched this podcast back in February, so I don't know why we chose this arbitrary time to have season two. It doesn't make any sense to me. I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that generally the performing arts season is in the fall. So it feels like this is the right time for a second season.
I think that's right. Yeah. It just felt as good as any, you know, unless you're like The Voice and they have like two seasons a year. On NBC, because they were like, "It's our 18th season." I'm like, "That show's been on for 18 years?" Yeah. No, it's
no. It's just fall.
They just keep running it. Yeah, they just keep running it over and over. So maybe that's it. We'll do like BBC. We'll cut three episodes and call it series two, and then come back with series three. Anyway, that's enough inside baseball. Welcome back, dear listener, from our hiatus where we just completed the Road of Democracy live stream. The first time we've kind of tried a little bit more of a PBS style thing, not as freewheeling and glib as the current product you're inhaling, but in your earballs.
Not as freewheeling, but fun.
Yeah. I mean, it was cool to have different folks host. I really appreciated that. Like just seeing, you know, different folks host and bringing on a lot of really awesome guests. Some we've had before, but for the most part, new to our airwaves, and hopefully the city got to see them in a different way. And that was really cool. Yeah,
you know, I think the thing that really sort of stuck with me was how, while the four panels definitely had different focuses, sure. Each panel had a different focus. Yeah. It was interesting to me how in every conversation, it seemed like there was a lot of sort of circling around this conversation about the role of the arts in bringing people back together or bridging differences. And I think as we've just experienced this last week with a pretty monumental election, you know, I think our country and our state still has some work to do insofar as like how we create belonging and inclusion and a sense of togetherness, right? It still feels like we are as split as we were before.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's this. I really liked reading John Stair, who's a sort of journalist, independent journalist, and he actually had a bit of a counter that it's less that we're a divided country, or he wanted to challenge the notion of divided. I think we're united in ways where we want to go, but it's also, but perhaps maybe the division comes from just sort of the attachment to the perhaps to the jerseys and elements of things, right? Like the teamness of sort of how almost like you've talked about this before, how our politics feels like pro wrestling,
yeah,
or sports, right? Which is a very easy thing to produce and maybe generates ratings, but in terms of the long term of, we have to get back together ultimately, right? And live together and do this together, right? I don't know how it does that, right? Or doesn't, we haven't solved for that, right? So I think he offers that we have paths to being actually more united than we might be, even though I know the times this week and shoot last, you know, this whole campaign has felt bleak at times because of the way it's been handled or executed. So that being said, I think what was really great about the Road to Democracy series that we did is lifting up, I think some key themes that are still, I'm still sitting with, and I look forward to keep chewing on our podcast, in our work. Yeah. Right. Particularly like how Sam Rickers from WEDIC, Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, reaffirmed that the notion of, although artists are going to make art, he's like, we should not take this for granted. This isn't when artists create for the politic, for the body politic, the public, it's not giving back, but rather there should be a transaction that they should be paid for, right? They are doing something that's in service. You know, it's an exchange, right? They are advancing our shared sense of connection to place or shared sense of connection to each other, or at least at the very least, inviting us to reflect on our connection to ourselves and what do we mean to each other, right? So, and that shouldn't be taken for granted. We need to, that is economy.
Yep.
Right? And that's, we need to hammer that point constantly over the course of the next year, right? That this is not, you know, it's not a charity.
I wonder how that, like, I think there's, and we've talked about this in a number of different venues and ways, right? I think we've sort of come at it differently over the last few weeks and months, but this idea, and I think we've also seen this too, right? This feeling that like arts and creativity more so, right, is so elemental to us that like when things happen, people just start creating, right? I think we saw that obviously in the uprising. People just started drawing pictures, right? They started painting murals. They started doing these chalk drawings. And even like last week, you know, as the week closed when the vote was coming down in Pennsylvania, and you know, we were passing around just some video of the folks, you know, in the street in Philadelphia, right? Like, yeah. And they had like, they were playing music and they had like created all these incredible signs and all these fun costumes of like mailboxes and you know, like, and no, but nobody paid them to do that, right? They was just like, hey, we're gonna have a party. We're gonna do this thing and it's gonna be fun.
Yeah.
And so I think that, I don't say that devalues, right, art, but I think there's this sense that like, well, people can just do it. Why do we have to pay them, right? And I think that that continues to be, I think, a part of the story that for us, right, is how do we place a value on the production and the value that this production has for society at all levels, right? And I think as we think about, you know, as we continue to work on connecting the arts with civic solutions, I think that becomes like a much more interesting conversation, right? How does arts and creativity drive public solutions is a question that we continue to try to figure out and make connections for people.
And I think about one of the solutions for what, right? And there have been problems that Milwaukee has had to deal with, right? Like inequity with regards to the outcomes and life of Black, brown people, right? In the central city and north side and south side, right? That's been around and continues to persist. Like, again, not to say all cities, hashtag, but most northern cities have had to deal with that as well, right? Milwaukee's not alone, but certainly we are not ranking high in outcomes. So just want to have some nuance there. But then you put on top of that, the impact of the pandemic, which has exacerbated that, as well as makes it really difficult for folks to connect and even be in public spaces together, and possibly even accelerating isolation and otherness, right? The effects of not just the sickness of the virus, but the mental challenge of feeling disconnected, right? That's facing us in the next 12 months. And I'm really hopeful how arts and culture could be leveraged in service to addressing that. Like, that's what I'm really curious about and hopeful to see what solutions happen, but also hopefully how we marshal it intentionally.
Yeah, you know, I think the project that Anne Basing's group is doing, right, the Time Slips project, where they are employing artists to reach out to our senior friends and neighbors who cannot, right, like they are the most at risk right now, given the COVID burst that we're in right now. How they are, you know, making connections, are employing artists to make connections with the elderly folks in our community, I think is a clear example of how people who are artists who have a certain way of engaging others, right, can be leveraged and marshaled in this moment to create social impacts that I think we all agree are important. And then, you know, I also, you know, sort of go back to even Election Day last week here in Milwaukee, and like having folks like the Jamming to the Polls stuff that the Metcalf yep. Park folks did, or Dasha, you know, doing music performances out, like to entertain folks as they were, you know, going, doing their civic duty. I think there's so much, you know, art and creativity, and it just generates so much joy and engagement, and at a time when we definitely need it, right? You know, COVID numbers on the rise. What feels like it's going to be a long coming winter. How do we position the work of our groups in addressing that sense of isolation and disconnection that I think is just super, super important?
Yeah. I was thinking, you mentioned Anne Basting, and it's still what resonates from our talk that we had with her, is these like moments of wonder and enchantment that I think often arts and culture inspire, yeah. right? And sometimes that moments of wonder are curiosity, and sometimes those moments of wonder are you see yourself, or you see your story, or you hear your story brought back to you, and it resonates powerfully because you might have never seen it in that way, right? And what I'm imagining, or what maybe you didn't even say this out loud, but at least what I'm intuiting, is that we're going to need a lot more of that in the coming weeks and months, right? And how can we support, you know, the arts and culture, either culture creators or individuals, or the institutions that can generate more of those to scale, as I borrow Silicon Valley speak, right? Like, that's got to happen in Milwaukee, stat. And I also think the belief of that, if you align those to solve really cool, like, again, really tricky or knotty problems or issues too, I think that can be done, you know, as well. We were just in conversation this week with some folks at the Wisconsin Bike Federation. And, you know, David, just hearing their insights around how they've been looking at education of young people, students, kids around safe streets, and how they've involved them in the mapping and using visual and like design elements to help them see, like invite them to also be part of the conversation, right? They get a say in like what makes a neighborhood safe, and that's the translation, so that perhaps their insights gets put in part of the plan. And hearing them share stories about how certain students who were not performing well, traditional manners, they lit up differently in that space. Yeah. And that the teachers shared, as a result of being engaged in that way, it actually had an ameliorative effect overall, right? Like, this is what I'm talking about, right? That's, to me, these are like, we know the city's full of thousands of those stories, right? And what does it mean to lift those, more of those stories up? I'm not saying our pod is going to just devote to that, but I think the work is that that's not always accessible for people when they think of arts and culture. And what would it mean for them to go, yeah, that's right. That's what happens when arts and culture is integrated.
And I think too, you know, you brought up our friends at the Bike Federation. I mean, they are two self-described artists,
Yeah. Right? The people who came to us, yeah, their day jobs say program manager, right?
Program director,
and director. All that, yeah. But yeah. But they
self-identify as artists. And, yeah. and I think they're, I think that there are more, they are not the exception, but they are the rule, right? There are artists, and we've talked about this before, right? There are artists and creatives in our city that do plenty of other stuff outside of their practice, whether it's, you know, working in restaurants or an office building or being a program manager at a nonprofit, and that they bring great value to our city and our community. And, you know, again, I think just to build a little bit on your last point, I had a conversation earlier this week with somebody in finance, and this firm does a lot of like public finance stuff, right? Potential donor, whatever. And, you know, she asked like, how can we help you? And I was like, I think the one thing you can help us with, you know, outside of writing a check, is how do you get all of the incredible folks in your firm who are, you know, working in capital markets, public finance, like all of that stuff, how can they help us articulate the social impact of the arts and arts and culture engagement and the interventions in arts, the arts world, in a way that creates impact, right? In a sort of like social impact bonds kind of way, right? Like from public financing, like how do we construct a social impact bond for the arts? Because I think there's something super, we all know, we talk about this every week, right? We know that the arts has these ameliorative effects. It increases kids' reading rates. It makes them better at math. It does all this stuff. I think, you know, school districts, local governments, state governments have an interest in that stuff, right? So how do we create the financing models so that our organizations can be paid to do that programming, right? And I think that is literally, that's what we're talking about when we talk about integration of arts into civic fabric. I think that's super exciting. The woman I was talking to, her eyes lit up a little bit. There was no promises made, but at least the idea is out there, right?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, I think that's the other thing that, you know, I had the pleasure of being with Lynn Lucius, who, you know, who's, I think, one of our city's, you know, important people in the philanthropic area, but she knows arts as well. So I had the opportunity to be in conversation with her, and she, you know, she shared with me or reaffirmed with me this notion of like, I think this one of the mental models maybe for donors right now is that there's a sense of like, well, there's, you know, I almost like there's too many arts programs, not too many, but it's like, I think to me, my interpretation is the conversation they have is they get asked for things. Right. Like, can you, you know,
yeah.
And I get it. Right. Like I get, cause on some level you got to pay your artists and you got to keep the doors open. I get that, but somehow we have to figure out how to have a different conversation, you know, with arts and culture and the general thing. You know, one more story I'll share. So one of our mutual friends who works at a national philanthropy has done a lot of research on, sort of, again, audience development for the arts. Like they do a lot of work on this, okay? And she shared with me that she had done a bit of an informal assessment, a survey with some of their grantees nationally around like, what's your priorities in light of COVID? Like when COVID hit, what are the top three things they're thinking about, right? And she shared with me what she was told, the top three when they averaged it out. It was audience, I'm worried about my subscribers. I'm worried about my staff. And I'm worried about fundraising. And she was struck by like, well, I didn't hear artists in the top and I didn't hear about the other like residents of my city, you know? And she goes like, I kind of get it because you're kind of thinking institutional and it's Maslow's needs. But again, when something happens, you're revealed, right, David? And it's like, why weren't we thinking about the artists? Why weren't we thinking about people? And that's, you know, and it's easy for me to sit in this role and kind of, I'm not wagging my finger. It's just one of those gut check things. Right. And I think that's what we have to figure out, David. It's like, I think that disconnect is real for some folks who aren't subscribers, who aren't donors. Why do they matter to me? And again, she's talking about a specific type of institution, but I think it behooves all arts and culture groups to figure out how are they in conversation, meaningful relationship with their neighbors, or be at least perceived as such. And I think that is a very, I don't know what your reaction to that, but to me, I'm sitting with that, right? Like that's,
I'd be curious to see how that question was framed, right? Because I probably said that, right, in some conversation about COVID, right? When somebody's asked me, like, what are you worried about? I'm like, I'm worried about my team, right? I'm worried about us, like, staying open. But I think our actions.
But not the independent artists. I know you're different, but like they said, like, I'm worried about my staff, not necessarily like my, you know, musicians or my actors. Yeah. That wasn't a top three average per se.
Yeah. I think too.
I'm just being clear. Yeah. Right. We're a little bit different than that.
Well, I think our focus is a little bit different. And I think also what we ended up doing was also different, right? We raised $200,000, right? In short order and moved it real, real fast, right?
To
people who are, by the way, not members of our organization.
Right.
Anyways. Right. So, yeah, I think, you know, from as the institutional guy here, right, like I get why. I also think, too, though, that there's like we have this opportunity. We talked about this so many times, right, that like in COVID, we have this opportunity to sort of rethink and redo and rework and re-implement. And I think this opportunity of thinking what the arts means to a community and what it means when you support the arts is a big question, right? Because we've gotten that question before, right? Why are we going to reallocate all of these CARES funds to you if we have to support housing, if we have to support utilities, if we have to support, you know, all these basic needs, right? I'm just talking about like governments, right? Like how can we make the justification that we're supporting the arts when we have to support food banks? And our answer, right, is look, when you support the arts, you're not writing a check to a building, right? You're supporting the people who work there and the people who they employ to be able to do a thing, the art, so that all these people can stay in their homes and continue to buy groceries at the supermarket and pay their bills and pay their car payments and all that other stuff. It is essentially a targeted assistance program to a very specific demographic. By the way, a demographic of people that also generates when we can convene and everything else, over $225 million of annual expenditures, hundreds of millions of dollars of economic impact, and attracts hundreds of thousands of people from across the region to our city to spend money,
right?
And I think that's like, I think the view that that we oftentimes, I think leaders in our city just forget about or don't think about as closely as we would like them to.
Yeah. And I think that's the charge in this coming year, right? As we think about where we go from here, is thinking about how do we, in light of, you know, as we try to weave a city back together after dealing with a pandemic and weave our society together, our shared space together after, you know, an election, you know, and moving forward. I'm really curious to figure, you know, I'm really excited and curious to see how arts and culture are going to find those intersections and creative solutions to have people feel like they belong, increase the sense of belonging. And also, you know, what are ways not just to have that feelings, but also to actually create intersections and structures, if you will, that reinforce that sense of belonging, you know? And some of that may be actual art itself. And, you know, when you see murals of people that look like where people live and who live there, and they're doing amazing things, or we're creating, you know, fostering policies that, you know, make it easier for people to create art, right? Or create culture. Because everybody wants culture, right, David? Like everybody wants culture. Maybe I'm, you know, a feet liberal third coaster. But it's not like when I go to a new city, I'm like, I can't wait to go to the big corporate chain. That's the same thing. You know, until we get sponsored by that corporate chain, you know, like I'm happy to rail against it. I want to know what does the city do, right? What's the spot? What is something unique about this place that helps me understand this place better because I eat here or I'm visiting, right? Like these are questions I think most people do when they think about that. And that is by the culture creators, right? They are creating those spaces and those foods or those experiences and stuff like that. So like we know, right, to your point, we know we want this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So
it's so funny. I just want to reflect a little bit about the big corporate chains, because like I think about like, I remember New York City before it became New York City like now, right? Like I remember when 42nd Street was scary. And now it's not scary anymore, right? Like you go there, there's like an Applebee's on every corner, there's a Bubble Gumps, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And the reason why they're all there, right, is so that when everybody comes to go see whatever's, you know, at the roundabout or whatever theater is playing whatever big musical, is that they feel at home. Right, like you can get a slice of pizza at the Sbarro or at the.
I know what I'm going to get.
And I think that's so interesting that like there is like you know you if you go to New York City you're going to go to Broadway you're going to see a show but you're going to eat at the Bubba Gumps. I'm not saying you, but like just
right. One might.
And so I think that's super interesting. I never understood that. I mean, intellectually, I understand, right? Intellectually, I understand that the sense of like, I want to have something that feels consistent, dependable.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. Right.
But it seemed like such a waste, right? Like if you're going to go to Broadway, why don't you just eat? You have all of this amazing food. You have all these amazing restaurants. Why Applebee's?
Yeah. I don't know. Again, it's not like Applebee's maybe has like a series of vegan foods or gluten-free things. We're like, well, I can't do that. I have to go. Fine. I get it. Right. Like you're right. Maybe it's an orientation and maybe we're a bit off course, but sometimes I know like, you know, my daughters are a little bit older now, but I remember they would sort of fret when they were younger about going to new situations or being on a new thing. Yeah. Right. And I get it. You're afraid of like, not, you know, you want to go, your dependable things. So this is something as even as adult, I understand and I grapple with, but like, I remember the mantra to sort of share with them is like, you know, your best friends had to start out as a new friend at some point. Right. And so how does that happen? Right. Like how does something become your favorite thing? You had to have the first time with that. There had to be a sense of adventure. There had to be, and again, the adventure comes from the trust of something, you know, and I don't know, maybe this is overly glib and simplistic. Right. But I wonder, like, how do we do that here in Milwaukee? And not saying it lacks, but like, how do we have more of that? Because when Kevin Suker was on our show, he did note that Milwaukee is a cover band city, right? He said, Milwaukee's a city that loves its cover bands.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's something to that. Like, what does it mean? What does it mean to foster a little bit more adventure or a little bit more curiosity? And again, I'm not saying we're not curious, but it's when you have that, that's when artists are able to create or inspired to create stuff that is challenging, and it becomes almost like this virtuous circle. I'm being very careful this to be very aware. I'm just a guy. I'm not like
you're just a guy.
I'm just saying this out loud. I'm just
in front of him.
And a
Zoom recording interface.
What do I have? Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing on some level. Like I get it. I'm like, who is this guy? You're listening. Who is this guy? I guess it's a plea for the city to like really stretch in this 2021, I guess. It's like for all of us to stretch. Right. And, you know, and try.
I mean, this is the time, right? I mean, we're going to be releasing our annual report this week. And in it, like, you know, we have a lot of, we report on a lot of stuff that we did over this last year, but there is sort of a plea about how, you know, how do we come together? Because we are A, stronger together than we are apart, and B, we have some big challenges ahead of us. And from the beginning of time until now, right, it's always been artists and creatives who've been able to see the way forward and to implement solutions for the way to build that way forward. And so I think we have to figure out how to be together, how to work together, and how our city's sort of intuitive creativity and artistic nature can sort of have a seat at the table to help drive some of those solutions.
Yeah. And I really am hopeful, because I think when we experience art and culture together, it is that bridge.
Yeah.
right? And it allows us to practice being in someone else's story and to listen and to be in a place of wonder. That's what I'm looking forward to in 2021, right? And how can, if not this podcast and the people we connect with and hear, but also hopefully in the activations we accelerate or the stories we amplify, increase more of that. Because my thought is once people get that one taste of wonder, then it's like, what else is out there? You know, what else is around the corner? And I'm really excited. That's what I'm looking forward to this coming year.
Hey, I meant to ask earlier, what was your take on the three Road to Democracy art commissions? Speaking of inclusion, belonging, and everything else. Yeah.
I thought they were really great. I know I'm biased because I work for it. And you know, honestly, I had no role in selecting. My only role was like building the infrastructure for intakes of questions and like supporting our panels to review.
None of us had any role in selecting. We had a panel to select the three.
Right. So thanks to the folks that represented, you know, the public library, the Hagerty Museum, were among those, and the art museum, were the institutions that were represented, but we also had independent artists as well.
Yeah.
From dance and from visual, as well as other forms. So that was, you know, six people helped us activate that. So to answer your question, my reaction was, I was really inspired that we were able to activate these folks and or amplify. And I mean, some were like works that kind of had already been started, and we had a chance to really reanimate or even recontextualize. This, like, for example, for Nicola Costa's piece on hoops, I think if I remember correctly, and I've known Nicole a bit, well, she's a fellow Public Allies alum, so I've kind of followed her.
Drink.
I knew that like the driving force behind that piece is representation, right? And the power of seeing someone wear hoops, a woman, Latina woman wearing hoops, means what that means, right? And so
you drive a civic outcome too, by the way, right?
Right. Yeah. And so to put it on top of that layer now, right? More than ever, we need that voice, you know, and to be seen and heard, and not be invisible and not be silent, right? I thought that was super great. And, you know, I'm very appreciative of, you know, Anna Larnois, you know, collection of stories of in Milwaukee, the powerful you know, woven tapestry of just like, you know, engagement in leadership and making sure more people, you know, again, Vel Phillips, she should be a national hero. How amazing Vel Phillips was and her role, right? In, you know, the housing piece. Again, I've only been in Milwaukee since 2011, right? And so like to me to come upon that story, it's like, gosh, golly, that's an American story. It's amazing. And then finally, Joshua Yang's piece on Unite. You know?
If you haven't seen it yet, go watch it. Yeah.
Woo. I had the feelings. I was, this is where you go, to be real. You know, honestly, you know what? You know why honestly is such a fun thing? Then you get to say, so has everything else to this point not been honest? But really, I say it as a marker to bring the audience closer to me, to like, hey, lean in. I really didn't know how you do dance on video, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's something about live. Like, I actually subscribed to the Joffrey, right?
You don't watch, so you think you can dance?
No. Oh, no, I do. I watch World of Dance, and I love me a good BTS video. You know, don't get me wrong. My daughter's a K-pop stan, so I'm along for the ride. But, you know, when I thought about, you know, there was a vibe of like, oh man, it'd be better if you know, there was a little bit. And then when I finally saw it and the way it was captured, because it did integrate the use of film and how the camera moved along, as the camera itself is choreography, not just the people, but the camera, the way the camera is deployed and how I felt disoriented at times, not like because it was bad, but rather it's the feeling of disorientation when we're not society, you know, that, which, okay, mission accomplished. And then I'm not going to spoil it for the viewer who hasn't seen it yet, but the sampling, the clever sampling of a cultural piece at the end, almost a collective callback, if you will, if someone's a movie buff, if you will, that's a little hint. If you're a movie buff, they call back an incredibly powerful piece to recontextualize in 2020 what it means. I'm like, oh, wow. Wow. So
yeah.
That was, I guess I'm revealing, I guess that was the one maybe that took me the most by surprise. And maybe that's why I had such a visceral reaction to it. So there you go. That was my reactions to the pieces. So that's my ad for go see him.
Go see him. Yeah. So, you know, the Joshua Yang piece, I'm such a big fan of Cedric Gardner. And so to be able to just see him dance was cool. I think to your point about how the camera's choreography itself sort of played added an interesting layer to the choreography of the total piece. But you're right, man. Like when the music goes out and it is just a monologue from
hey, don't spoil it. No spoilers.
Yeah. From the movie.
From the thing.
I think when we talk about artists as like civic leaders and solution providers, I mean that was a moment. That's a moment when you know in this movie where the actor becomes a person, right? And it delivers a very succinct message about society, about art, about politics, about what we have to do together.
Yeah,
that is just so incredible. And then yeah, so if you haven't seen the dance, check it out. It is on Facebook.
Now I want us to do a pod just to reflect on that piece. Because I have so many comments. I have so many insights that it came.
You know, I missed the panel discussion with three artists. I almost want to have each one of them on by themselves, right? To dive
right because there's a lot there.
There's so much. I think Nicole's piece to your point about how we talked about it just a little earlier that like how the portraiture can help drive a civic outcome as it relates to the census, right? How people can see that they actually count, like literally count, right? Like how cool is that, right? And then and then Anna's piece about like talking about or telling the stories of these great Milwaukee women who built democratic structures, right, and helped to build our road of democracy, I thought was just it was just really cool to learn even more about women like Val Phillips and Golda Meir and some of the others. So unqualified success, so exciting, so much fun.
Yeah, and I'm excited about how my hope is that the more we hype that up, that inspires more artists to come to us, you know, because I hope more opportunities come up, you know, where we can leverage more great support from the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or find ways to connect other opportunities to amplify, really important. We don't need an election to talk about the importance of being belonging again, and the importance of being counted, and the importance of having to be together. And that what these pieces, all these pieces did, this is stuff we need year round.
Yeah.
You know,
so. And speaking of, belonging and representation, man, Joshua Yang, Asian, can dance, great choreography. It was
so
cool.
This is why we're biased. We're so biased. That's right. Yeah, I think that's where we're leaning. Like I saw it. I'm like, dude, all right. I'm like, all right. All right.
Although, we grew the Asian caucus. We grew the Asian like arts caucus.
To be real, like America's Best Dance Crew always has a Filipino crew. Correct. So like so I'm not sweating that, you know, we're always there. So, but it, like I said, it's always great to see a dude, a fellow Asian man crush it, you know? And yeah, that's good stuff. So definitely, yeah, we were playing to us. We're a bit biased there. Love it though. Love it.
We will link to all the projects in the show notes. So if you haven't seen it, just make sure you check it out.
So I think that, you know, I think that does, you know, it's a good, I appreciate you bringing that back. And because I think it is a wrap up, not just the road to democracy, but also again, aligns with what we're excited about in this coming year, which is, you know, this coming season of the pod, hope to have more of these stories and leaders and individuals to really lift up the ways that they are, you know, their art and culture creation is making Milwaukee what it is, an amazing place to live and be. I'm looking forward to more of that, as well as looking forward to more of hopefully more difficult questions to grapple with. And we're not going to solve them in a day, but to sit with and to drive the work beyond podcasting, right, that we'll do. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. And I'm also looking forward to having guests on our show again. This is the first time in I think since June.
The open. With no, a cold
no, open. We had like a.
Oh, okay.
I think we had a couple episodes during the summer where it was just the two of us.
Was that during the writer's strike? Was that during the writer's strike?
That was during the guest strike. Yeah, with
the guest strike. Milwaukee was conducting a guest strike on our podcast. Yeah. Yeah, we should have guests.
No, we'll have guests. We have actually a great slate of folks coming up. Next week, we are going to have Supervisor Jason Haas on the show.
County Supervisor.
County Supervisor Jason Haas and Chairman of the Finance Committee on the show to talk about some exciting things happening at the county as it relates to arts funding. He is also my county supervisor and love having him as my representative. So
I have to say that I've used, again, the platform at Imagine MKE as an individual, not on the record, you know, not on paid time, but
you don't use time. The at imaginemke.org. No,
I'll use my
address,
Gmail address right. When I do this, and I do it off work hours. And I have to say, Jason, County Supervisor Jason Haas is the most responsive and quickest to respond of all the electeds I've interacted with.
You've ever interacted with?
I'm not counting like the bounce backs, not bounce backs, but like, you know, Tammy Baldwin's office, Senator Baldwin. They're good, you know, Senator Gwen Moore's, our state rep Gwen Moore. They always have a good like, hey, thanks for writing us. That's good.
They business. Have an auto response, yeah.
It's a good auto response. That's respect, right? No, Jason Haas, it's like, it's to me. He's talking to me, and I got to just shout out. That's not why we booked him. I just wanted the name.
We got to ask him about that.
I respect that because I got to think he gets a lot of emails.
Yeah, I'm sure he gets a ton of emails, and I got to tell you, like as we've been directing a lot of our advocacy at the county, particularly at the Finance Committee with the CAMP Act funding and the CARES Act stuff, I've heard from so many people about how responsive he's been. It's not just you.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you are just one who's.
I'm just a dude. Like I said, I'm just a dude. I'm just a guy. But yeah, he's doing the work because he's so respect to him. And I'm looking forward to talking to him next week. And you know, he won't be the only elected official. We're gonna keep having more electeds throughout the season, as well as you know more artists, as well as you know business leaders and academics, and any other fields I should mention.
All of them. No, you have to mention them right now, but yeah, we're just going to have people from all of the fields.
That's what I meant. All the fields. How about athletics? Let's try to get an athlete on.
Giannis?
Yeah, let's get Giannis. Get Giannis. I'm trying to figure out the outside culture angle on that, but sure. Let's get Giannis. Shrug.
Well, we have a 72 game season coming up, right? How's that going to work? They're just starting like in a few weeks. Like what's going on? Didn't they just finish like a short season?
You know, what's funny is like, we haven't had the draft yet. Have we?
We haven't had the draft yet.
Yeah. That's so right. You're right. I'm like, I'm trying to get my head around. Wait, they're going to play in like 4 weeks. Aren't they? They're going to play in 5 weeks. Oh my gosh. I've mentally thought of NBA as like being 6 months away, but you're right. How are they going to
No, it's coming.
Right? It's coming right now. It's coming super fast. Yeah. And my Bulls, I'm excited. And I don't think our listeners want to hear that podcast. So we'll pause that talk. But in the meantime, we want to thank you again for listening to this this sort of debut to season two. And you know,
we have other changes coming down the pike. Our fun corporate house, tropical house beats, likely going to be some changes around here soon. So be on the lookout for that. We're super excited to unveil the musical changes.
New musical around, update. Yeah. I think that's really going to get us beyond 250th in the world.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
That is it. Thanks for listening to another edition of Imagine MKE. Be sure to rate us 5 stars, share a positive review, smash that subscribe button, blah, blah, blah. Or talk to us at pod@imaginemke.org. We'd love to talk to you about the work.
You can hit us on Twitter and Instagram at @imagine_MKE or Facebook at @imaginemke. Mention the pod on social media and we will make you a #imaginaryfriendMKE in the #imaginenationMKE. Make sure you tune into the other pods in our Imagine MKE podcast Network, Arts Forward MKE. There's a lot of MKEs.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot.
Hosted by Lindsay Sheridan, and also Black Imagination with Tanita Hickman and Antoine Carter. You won't want to miss them. Please, please continue to reach out to your city electeds on the City Cares funding issue. The CARES funding is going, the clock is going to run out by the end of the year. So you can write a letter at imaginemke.org/act.
Till then, be safe, be healthy. And we look forward to talking to you real soon.